Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge Lists and Box Office Hits. I am your host, Shannon Holiday, and I am joined in the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing this afternoon, Letitia?
We're doing good. We had a massive sleep in. We've had some coffee.
I know.
And now we're ready to get going.
We both messaged each other yesterday and we was like, when are we doing the episode today? Are we doing it early? God, no. Not this week. Like, not this week. Let us sleep.
I could do with a sleep in. And then, yeah, I woke up at like 6:30. I was like, not today.
Not today.
And then went back to sleep till
Satan.
Yeah, literally 9:45. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I got up a bit later and I messaged you. I'm like, I need coffee, please. So this week we went and got coffee.
Yeah.
We're all perked up, percolated.
We played some totem tennis.
We did. Yeah. We went outside and played a bit of totem tennis, had a bit of exercise in the sun.
I've been getting into the exercise lately. It's
good.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it turns out to everyone playing at home that like stretching / yoga really helps your body. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Yeah, sort of just did it once as a sort of, not as a joke, but just like, oh, I'll just see how it go. And then I felt better and I was like, oh no. So now I've been consistent pretty much for about a week, which is good, but embarrassing.
What are all these endorphins? What is this?
Not even that. It's just like, you mean my body doesn't have to hurt every day?
Mm. Yeah. How was it after the first time? A bit creaky on the old bones?
Oh, no, like it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not doing anything
too strenuous.
Hardcore, because like what's the point?
I've been going back to the gym lately. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to go a couple of days a week just to get back into it because I kind of fell off for a while there. A few years ago, I was going all the time.
And
I was quite fit.
A little junkie.
A bit of a gym junkie. So I'm trying to get back to that point, but you can't just rush it. You can't just go 5 days a week. You'll kill yourself.
No, because you used to be the face of KFC in our workplace.
I know. Remember how that was?
That was wild. When I first met you.
I looked back at a couple of photos when I think it was around that time and I got back from Hawaii and it was like a period of time when I was like eating quite poorly. I wasn't gymming.
Yeah.
And I did not like what I saw. I'll just say that. And so I made a bit of a change and I was going to the gym quite a bit and yeah, I got quite fit. And then I had an operation on my stomach and means I had to stop going to the gym. Like I couldn't go because it would have just teared open my entire body like the chest burster out of Alien. So I didn't go for a while and it kind of changed my motivation of going.
It does.
When I was allowed to go, I wasn't going as much and I kind of teed it off. So now I'm trying to get back into it and I'm still enjoying it, but I did legs the other night.
Ouch.
And boy oh boy do I feel like a robot when I walk. And this is only day one afterwards. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow when I'm back at work, it's going to be a bit rough on the old stairs up and down.
Yeah, I'm trying to slowly get back into being a bit more like fit and active, but
yeah,
just casually, because if I go too hard, I'll stop and then I'll never go back. So I'm just trying to ease.
Yeah,
like same thing,
into making a habit out of it. But you do feel good after going. Like whenever I go to the gym, it's like the hardest thing in the world getting there. But once I'm there, I'm fine. And then once I'm finished, I'm like, that felt really good. Like it was really good. I'm glad I went. And then rinse, repeat the next day. I'm like, oh, I have to go again.
Yeah.
Just getting into a habit.
My work switched a little bit. The stuff I'm doing at work is switched a little bit now. Yeah. So I'm a bit more active, which is good. So I'm just trying to like
get in
and
get comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. It's good. I think we're both, we're going to be fit summer body ready.
Yeah. We're going to look good in summer.
I know. Look out, beach.
Watch out, everyone.
Watch out.
How's your hot girl summer?
Hot girl summer. How's your week been?
It's been good. Pretty much just that. Work's been interesting. Hopefully in a good way, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, some
with
developments,
that.
But we'll keep you all posted.
Yeah, and then just trying to get back into doing some work, hanging out with a friend. Shout out to Brittany. We're gonna be hanging out, doing some little writing. Hopefully tomorrow. Yeah, getting back into that. Got my last masterclass on Tuesday coming up, so I need to watch Shader. Yeah, just trying to be a little productive human
yeah.
and not burn out, which, you know,
We all do from time to time as well. I've been watching a fair amount this week, and I remember at the start of last week, you're like, you remember we've got World Cinema this week. Make sure you watch some World Cinema movies. I'm like, I am. Just give me time.
And what did he not do? Watch a little World Cinema. I was on his case all week.
I know, because you've got access to my Letterboxd.
God damn, so you shouldn't have got me onto Letterboxd, Shannon.
I know. You're like, you need to watch this. And I'm like, I know. So I've been watching a bunch of other stuff as well. Besides, I watched a few things for this episode, which we will get into later. So I did some stuff. But I've been watching a lot of new films this week.
You have been. I watched a couple.
A bunch. So I started the week, we weren't talking about the new ones yet, but I started the week watching Inside Out.
I watched that again too.
Pixar. I loved it. It was really good. Obviously, we watched that getting ready for next week when Inside Out 2 comes out.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited because I hadn't seen this before. This is brand new to me. This was from 2015. Just one of the Pixar ones I just didn't get to. I just didn't get to it back when it came out, and I haven't watched it since.
I think I only watched it maybe now twice because I was traumatized in the cinema by Bing Bong going.
Oh, when he disappeared.
I cried.
Yeah.
I cried like a little bitch.
Like I get it. Like that part's emotional, and that was the Pixar emotional string pulling there. I don't know. I thought it didn't hit me as much as I guess other people. Mm. I never had an imaginary friend when I was a kid. But
me either,
like,
a twin sister.
True. you were like, imaginary?
I didn't need another one.
Are you real? So I don't know. It just didn't hit me as much. But I get the concept, and like growing up, you kind of do forget about all those like mystical fantasy things that you kind of imagine as like a 2-3-year-old in your own little world. And that's the point of this film is she's growing up, and the whole messaging is – I guess a moment doesn't have to have one emotion attached to it. And it's coming to that kind of conclusion at the end of the film is, like you can be, like can be a happy memory, but it also can have, you know, little parts of sadness as well.
It's a really heady movie, but it's very well translated for children, which I think is what Pixar's good at, but what they need too, because it's like, it's a way to make kids understand emotions and having them.
Yeah.
But so it's like
really smart actually, yeah.
Enjoyable for adults too.
Yeah. I had a really good time. It's a great voicing cast as well. So you've got Amy Poehler as Joy.
I love Amy.
She's like dialed up to 10 in it as well. I'm very much looking forward to the second one with is it Maya Hawke as Anxiety? Hawk,
and then Io Debris.
Anxiety.
Yeah. As Envy.
And there's one other one as well that you've got Ennui, and then you've got who's the big guy? He's like Embarrassment.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Embarrassment. So I'm looking forward to the extra emotions in the second one.
It's awkward though why they did that. Do you know part of the reason why they did all new emotions?
Teenager?
No, well, it was
like she's growing up into a teenager.
It was a story thing, but also like so in the original you had Bill Hader, Mindy Kaling.
And you also had
Phyllis.
Yeah, out of
someone. I can't think of the last name. But a lot of them weren't getting paid the same amount as Amy Poehler, and they weren't going to be getting paid a lot of money for this sequel.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason that they did New Emotions was because the original cast didn't want to sign on to get paid what they were going to be getting paid.
Oh, really?
Well, that's what I've heard around the internet.
Yeah, okay.
Whether it's true or not.
I don't know. Like, that's an interesting
point. Yeah, but I do remember it coming up a lot at the very beginning.
So do you think they're not going to be in it as much?
I don't know if they're in it at all.
They're in it. Yeah, they're in it.
Are they?
Yeah, they're in the trailers and stuff.
Maybe just
but
briefly.
But what I've seen is from the trailers and what I've gathered is these new, like it starts off normal with all the five usual ones.
Yeah.
These four or five other emotions move in.
Yeah.
And then they trap them in a glass.
That's right. Yeah.
But then I'm like, I don't know what happens from there. So
I'm keen to see it. I love Pixar and I love the cast for this one. So yeah.
It's one of the better IPs they've done recently. Like, I think we said in a different episode, there's been a few misfires in their recent original IPs.
Did you see there was an article that came up in, like, one of the trade papers, like Variety or Hollywood Reporter, and they were saying that Pixar's got a new direction now and it's going to more universal stories rather than, like, one film director having an individual vision. So, like, Soul, Luca, Turning Red – I think part, like, look, some of them were really good and I think you do need to...
I like Luca.
What am I trying to say? Yeah, like some of them, Luca and Turning Red I quite enjoyed for what they were. And I don't think they were aimed at a particular niche audience like that article's making it sound like. I think it's Pixar's way of being like, diversity isn't working.
They're still under Disney. So
yeah, so we're going to just tell
forced,
really
forced diversity.
Mainstream stuff.
Very corporate business PR diversity, which is so
gross,
gross and insincere.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's why it's not working for them.
No, it's very difficult to try and toe that line. And even my friends and I have tried to write stuff at times for certain initiatives by like networks and stuff, which I'm not gonna name and shame, but and they're very heavy on diversity. And even like, you know, me writing stuff as someone who's not super white, not super straight, as a woman, whatever, you're still trying to tell these stories and like, oh, what else can I like add in to like beef it up in the diversity? And you're like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
But they're almost looking for too much to be like, look at us, we're diverse.
Have you seen the whole thing completely off topic of films, but have you seen how Twitter has changed for Pride Month?
I'm on Twitter. No, I haven't seen it. Also, we're dead naming it because it's X, but I'll dead name you forever. It's Twitter.
So for example, when BMW changes their logo, it's got a rainbow on the background, but then when it's BMW Middle East, it's not.
Oh, of course. Because you're like,
I know, but that is the corporate agenda, you know.
You're like, have you seen this? And they just go on Twitter and there's some like real gay crap on it about Maggie Rogers changing pronouns. And I'm like, I'll watch that later.
Add to list.
Just bookmark that.
Anyway,
one.
Like, but that's the corporate agenda.
Oh.
Like, I'll diversify for the Western world.
Yeah, but like, not for the ones where you'll get murdered.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, that's how insincere it is. And that's why I don't like about it.
I've been to World Pride in Sydney and BWS is BWS.
I think I've seen the logo. Yeah.
Yeah, they do a lot of that, which is kind of gross, but also stupidly fun. Me and my friend, because we went.
I'm fine with some of the brands that make it like fun and like you dumb. Said, play on words and a bit silly, just for, like just to play into it. Like, but when it's forced, like Disney does, it's a bit.
Yeah, I had a depressing a bao bun during World Pride that was somehow they made the bao bun like genuinely like a rainbow color. It was weird, and it was weird to eat. But me and my friend were like,
"This is fine. Why not? Whatever.
This
why
is dumb
not?
Fun. Yeah.
Why not?" All right, getting back onto track. So obviously Inside Out 2, Inside Out 2 is next week, so we'll check that out.
Very excited.
I did see Bad Boys Ride or Die, the fourth one in the Bad Boys saga, and I thoroughly enjoyed this. I had a good time. I put on the third one the night before because I went with Ben, my housemate, and he's like, oh, I haven't seen any. I'm like, you really don't need to.
I haven't either, but
you really don't need to. But I was like, look, we got some time. I'm going to check on the third one. That's probably the only one that's relevant, and it kind of does play into more of the third one than any other one. And yeah, it's just more of this. I went into this knowing what it was going to be because I did watch the third one the night before. I have seen them all before. It's not taking itself seriously at all, not to the point where Fast and Furious is just ridiculous like that. It's not that far down the end of the spectrum, but it's just a bit of fun. Like it feels like that 90s buddy cop movie that vibe that we've been missing for like two decades. Whereas like all the new stuff has to have like a meaning behind it, or like, you know, like there's a message.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's a reason why this is happening in the world, and like the political standpoint. It's like, no, let's just have fun with a movie for 2 hours. Like they're these, you know, friends that have been friends as cops for like, you know, 30 years or something, just getting into crazy scenarios. And that's exactly what it was. And I had a good time watching it.
You know what? Sometimes movies just need to be fun.
Yeah, exactly what it was. It was a popcorn flick for the need of being a popcorn flick.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was good. It's not going to win an Oscar, but it's not trying to.
That's the thing. Sometimes it can just be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had fun with that. I watched Tarot, which is the tarot card movie that came out a month or two ago. It's like a mild horror, like a teen horror.
Mm-hmm. How does tarot get into horror? Because I don't understand how that works.
The tarot cards.
I mean, I understand tarot. I have a
it's
deck.
It's like an evil deck.
Right.
So there's this whole backstory of the deck and how they were made and how there was a curse put on the deck.
I see. Okay.
They find the deck when they're at a party.
Yeah.
And they're like, one of them's into horoscopes. It's like, I'll do all your horoscopes. So she does a reading for all the friends and the last card like tells them how, you know, and that's
death.
One of them gets death. I think the last main girl who does her
death
own.
Death isn't the bad one. Tower's the bad one.
It's
for any fans out there.
Thank you. We'll explain that in a different podcast. But
we won't. I don't know that much.
It doesn't go too much into the explanation of what the cards mean. And she kind of like does a little bit of a reading. And then the last card the picture on the card, and she kind of does a bit of an explanation of like, oh, you need to do this and because of this. And each of the kind of characters, it's very supernatural. So this like force of nature essentially turns into what the last card was and kind of chases them one down individually once they leave the house. They've got to work out how to stop this whole supernatural element to it. It's very PG horror,
mm-hmm.
very CGI'd horror as well. Like it's not physically like someone, if they're dressed up as like looking like death, they're not there. It's like CGI.
Yeah.
It's a very cheaply made horror. It was honestly a little bit boring, to be honest. Like for a horror, it didn't like, it's pretty stock standard story. It's got no real big names besides one of them. It's got the friend character from Spider-Man, Jacob something.
Mm-hmm. I know the guy, but I...
Yeah. Yeah. The bigger dude. I don't know his name.
I'm not a fan of Spider-Man, so I've got no idea. Sorry, okay. Guys.
He's in that. He's probably the only big name out of it.
And yeah.
Honestly, I would probably say miss it. If it goes on streaming, maybe check it out, but I wouldn't go out of your way to kind of go get a ticket and check it out. It's not really that exciting. Last one for this week's watching, though, is I watched this week on Netflix. It's called Hitman, and it's got Glenn Powell in it. And it's about a university professor who's like a loner. He's like into bird watching and stuff.
He's a twitcher. That's what they call them.
Twitchers.
I know that because my sister's into birds.
She's a twitcher. I'm going to call her that. Yeah.
She'll like it. So don't.
Glenn Powell plays this character called Gary. And he essentially helps out the police force because he's a teacher in psychology and stuff. So he helps them out. With undercover stings, trying to catch people who are trying to kill people. Like someone else goes in undercover and he helps them out. The usual undercover guy gets put on probation from work for doing something dodgy. So they send him in. He's not ready, but he has to get sent in and kind of be undercover and catch these people out from trying to pay for like someone to kill someone. And he turns out to be really good at it because he can read people. Like he's a nerd himself, but mm-hmm. he can read people quite well. So he plays the character. And then slowly over time, he starts assuming the hitman persona more than his own persona over the course of the film. And he meets a lady like halfway through. She's trying to get her husband killed. But he stops her. Like they don't catch her. Like he stops her and go, hey, maybe this isn't a great idea. Think about it and go away. Starts a romantic involvement with this lady, but as the hitman and not himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes layered in terms of like who he's playing at what time and like the different characters and what lies he's telling. It's really good. It's really funny. Glenn Powell just showcases his range on the different characters and stuff he can play. Really awesome. So won't go into details on where it kind of ends up because it gets so layered with the different characters who know different things and where they're at and stuff. And it just becomes chaos towards the end. Yeah, worth checking out. It's on Netflix. It was bought, I think it was shown at Tribeca Film Festival end of last year, and it got bought by Netflix because they liked it so much. So
cool.
Yeah. And it just got added then.
I watched a few things, but some of which we'll talk about a little bit later. I didn't know if this was a world film or not. Like I didn't look into what language it was because it was a Lars von Trier film. And I was like, oh, I've heard of Dancer in the Dark. I'll watch it. Oh, I hate it.
Really?
One of the worst films I've seen. Not that it's a weird thing. So it's not like a beautiful film in terms of like the style. I think it's taking on like Dogma 90 something. Like it's a style of filmmaking that I haven't looked into. So sorry, I'm not educated in that. But anyway, kind of reminded me of like, did you ever watch Brum as a kid?
Oh yeah, I loved it.
That's how it feels.
Really?
It's just like, ugh. What? Like, you know, a Brum dingy and like,
yeah, okay.
English and blah. Like that's how, like,
gritty but not and in just like the not palpable in a
nice way.
way.
So like that's the style of it. At the beginning I was like, what is this? I don't really get it. It's kind of a musical, kind of not, like what's going on? And then I sort of was like, okay, whatever, I'm in for it, I suppose. Yeah, it's telling the story of like a lady that's slowly going blind. So it's like depressing. And then it just, should I spoil it or not spoil it?
I think it's been out for a while. I don't think many of our audience is going to be like, hey, why did you tell me about a Lars film?
No, do you wish to?
It's fine.
It's not fine. Worth it. So anyway, so she's like slowly going blind and her son's got the same degenerative thing that she's got, but she hasn't told him how bad it's going to be. And so she works in the factory and she's trying to save all this money to pay for his surgery that he doesn't know he's having. so that he can see, because she's like very much blind. Anyway, so it goes on, it goes on, it goes on. The guy that she's living in this couple's house. Well, she's living in a trailer, but on their property. He steals the money because he's broke, and then frames her. So it seems like she's stealing the money, and then she kills him because he's asked her to, but sort of makes it like either you take the money or you kill me. And she's like, well, I need the money for my son. So she kills him, and you're like, what the? And then she gets imprisoned. And then they're going to give her the death penalty, because of course they are, because it's the state that they're in. There's just this tragic scene at the end where this blind lady's trying to get money for her son so that he can survive, but she's getting the death penalty. And it's just, it's the most horrific scene, because this lady that's good friends with her goes to watch. And it's hard to describe without actually just witnessing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just watch this before bed. I was like, sobbing, because it's just so, like, it's effective in that it makes you feel something. So it's like, it's a good film in that sense. It's one of the most depressing things I've ever seen. I didn't finish it and go, oh, thank God I watched that film. I just saw it. I was like, why did anyone think anyone needs to see this film? Because it's not one that has like a broad message that goes, oh, thank God our eyes are open to a tragedy and we should treat people better or something like that. Like, it's not that kind of a broad, you know, oh, this group of people is discriminated against, we shouldn't anymore. It's just kind of like, let's just tell a really, really horrific story that's not even shot nicely, and you just finish it and you're like, what the?
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that a lot of Lars films, as a director, he can be quite polarizing and kind of controversial as a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of like true like, life controversies, which I haven't gone into because whatever.
There's that. Obviously, he's done Antichrist as well, which I haven't seen.
I do want to see that.
I do want to see it. And obviously, he's done Nymphomaniac, which I saw this week, which I'll talk about later. But I can understand when you explained it and explained what kind of film he's made. I'm like, yeah, I can see it. After seeing, Nymphomaniac and understanding his filmmaking style and what type of film he makes, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. He makes those really depressing stories.
I'm curious to watch his other ones, but having watched that one first, I'm like, maybe that was a mistake.
Yeah, well, at least you might have done the worst one first.
Yeah, I think so. You might have, arguably, yeah.
Although it's just, I've heard Antichrist is pretty full on too.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting what I got, and I was like, what the have I done?
I will. Where did you watch this?
I was either on Canopy or SBS. I think it was Canopy.
Either way, it's SBS has a lot of.
Also, you can totally just sign up for the library. You don't actually have to go in.
Oh, okay. I'll work that out.
Sign up online.
Yeah,
and then
once we get off this, I'll get Canopy off you. Because there's so many films, I'm like, where am I going to find this? And luckily some of them have been on SBS, especially the world ones. But the quality's not perfect and there's
Canopy's
ads.
Canopy's pretty good. There's no ads. And yeah, it's free. You just sign up to the library. Because you'd be in the region.
I'm in the same region.
To sign up for it. And it's free. So
I'll check that out. Because I do want to see a lot more Lars.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Antichrist next.
Yeah, I'm keen to watch. I don't know if I'm keen to watch more. Yeah, anyway, it was just horrible.
Keen is not the word. Interested is a different word.
If anyone's seen Dancer in the Dark and you have thoughts on it, please write in, because I would love to talk to someone who's seen it. But, oh my God, I had.
It's pretty niche. You might find one or two people.
The worst time.
what else have we been watching? Anything uplifting?
I did watch one that was very different in style.
Yeah.
It dropped on. What did it drop on here? Dropped on something here. Binge, I think.
It's the one I think you're about to talk about, because I saw your letterbox. It was on Binge.
Yeah, I watched Am I Okay, which I think is Hulu in America. It's one by...
HBO Max.
Okay, sorry, HBO Max.
Hulu is Disney Plus.
That's true. It's a Tig Notaro film. Her and her wife, whose name escapes me, directed this one. It's starring... Stephanie Allien is also the other chick. Starring Dakota Johnson. It was fun. Basically, I saw the trailer on the internet a while back, and it looks like, oh, 30-something realizes finally that she's gay. Out. Oh, no, what do I do?
Yeah.
But watching the actual film, it's not exclusively that which was kind of, I don't know, I was like pleasantly surprised at this. It's a fun, silly, sort of silly but deep enough film about two best friends. One's about to go off to London and live a whole new life. The other one's like, oh, no, I think I'm gay. And they're both deeply codependent, whether they want to admit it or not. And the two of them sort of have a falling out because she's going to London and she's discovering something else and she's scared because she's just had her best friend sort of.
It's got elements of Frances Ha in it.
Sort of, yeah.
That codependency, not so much the coming out part, but at least the, that's the main through line of Frances Ha.
As the film goes on, they're both freaking themselves out independently and then realizing that, you know, they kind of need their come back together at the end because they need their best friend. But it's a fun
journey
yeah. and it's just an easy film.
Is Dakota Johnson, is she playing up a comedic role? Because I think that's something Hollywood needs to explore with her.
She is. She's playing a comedic role, but it's not over the top ha-ha comedy. Yeah, it's just
She's deadpan. Because that's her comedy style and she's really good at
She's really good at it and she's great in this film. Like, yeah. If anyone's just mildly curious,
I'm going to check it out.
An easy watch. It's not a perfect film. Like, it's not going to win any awards, but it is just like a very simple premise that's executed quite well, which is wild because I think it took them a couple of years to shoot this film.
I think I looked this up when I saw you had it, and I think it's a 2022 film.
Oh, I think
and then
it went to a.
I think it went to a
2021. Went to a thing like a festival.
It went to a festival, and then it got bought, and now it's eventually back. It's on streaming. So
and it's good. I was like, this is the kind of film I needed to watch. That's just
bit of fun, right?
Bit of fun. Easy.
That's how I felt about Hitman.
Yeah.
Because I was going to watch those basically back to back. I just haven't got to Am I OK yet.
Yeah. So I watched that because I was going to watch something else. And then I saw that was out and I was like, nope, I want to watch this. And it was as good as I kind of, not I'd hoped because I didn't really have expectations for it. But I was like, cool, this is what I needed right now. The other thing I watched last night, which I haven't talked to you about, wasn't a movie or anything. I watched The Actors on Actors with Chloe Sevigny and Kim Kardashian.
I saw that they were doing one together. Is it worth checking out or is it just a train wreck?
Look, Chloe Sevigny has so much grace. I don't know how she does it. I think she's known Kim K because they're
friends.
Well, they're in the fashion scene. Yeah. They're always around.
Yeah.
And then they're in this together because they've both been on Ryan. Oh my God. Who's the guy that does Horror Story? Ryan Murphy projects.
Yeah. Cause, she's on AHS. Yeah. So Kim Kardashian.
Chloe Sevigny had been on American Horror Story at some point, but I can't remember which season. Earlier. It was one of the early ones. And then she's just done Capote and the Swans. And then Kim Kardashian's in the latest American Horror Story season, which I can't remember what it is anymore.
It's getting really crazy.
I've been out of it. The last one I watched was Apocalypse.
Is it Delicate? American Horror Story, Delicate something?
Honestly have no idea what it is at this point.
I don't even know if Emma Roberts is in it anymore.
Yeah, she is. She played a cross from Kim Kardashian, which I know because I watched this this thing and they put a lot of clips in. It's a hard watch because Chloe Sevigny is such a filmmaker's actor. Like she's, you know.
And whereas Kim's coming at from a completely different standpoint.
She's been in the scene for so long and she's a proper actress. And look, I enjoyed the interview in the sense of like I've barely seen anything of Kim Kardashian ever. I watched maybe one episode of The Kardashians at one point because I was like, I just need to understand
what this is.
What has got everyone. I've
watched a couple of episodes as well.
Deeply invested.
We all like to think it's like just completely reality. We're just watching this family from like, you know, a fly on the wall. We're not. It's formulated.
It's heavily
scripted.
It was interesting to hear Kim Kardashian talk as a person as opposed to a personality.
Yeah, I think.
That being
she's
said.
She's got more, she's comes across as a bimbo, but I think she's actually probably more switched on. We actually probably think she is.
I think there has to be a level of it to get as far as she's gotten successful. And to continue, she has to have some brain, whether she's actively using it or not is up for interpretation. And
Does she need to? She's got money.
That's the thing. It's one of those things where I was like, I'm not going to get into what I think about Kim Kardashian because honestly, I don't think about her enough to have a true opinion. But yeah, it was so sad to watch in the sense of like, she thinks she's starting to act now and starting to do it quite well and getting in, not quite well in that she has an opinion of herself, but she's very much trying to get into acting at the moment. And she's had an acting coach for
AHS.
The AHS. And it's like, it's kind of sad because she's like, oh, I didn't think they thought that I would be so good at it. So they would allocate an entire day to a scene for her.
Wow.
And then she'd get it done faster because she was capable.
She can do it. Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, let's do another scene today. So they'd end up shooting like a couple of scenes or maybe two scenes a day instead of allocating a whole day. We're like, wow, it's just
wild.
Can
you imagine a whole day on one scene?
Well, sometimes they do that, but very rarely.
But like, come
it's
on.
It's just wild
it how, demanding
how
scene
much
is, but.
they're giving to her as opposed to anyone else. And look, whatever, do what you want, Ryan. But, you know, she'd go in
you
and
know
she'd be-
why though.
She's
the draw cut. Absolutely. She doesn't matter on her acting ability. She's a name.
And she's talking about acting and stuff and she's talking to Chloe and she's like, you know, do you think, do you, you know, have to try and get into the character's you know, so much that you understand what decisions they're going to make. And it's like, yeah, babe, I don't know who your acting coach is, but that's acting 101. And I know that from doing a very brief stint studying directing.
Yeah.
And in, often you learn how actors get taught to act so that you learn how to talk to them as a director. And you're like, this is acting 101 to basics. Play a character. This is how you get into doing real acting. So it was just, it was a struggle to hear. It was very shallow from Kim Kardashian's perspective because she just doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And then anytime like Chloe would ask her a question, it was very much, oh, like I was into films as a kid. My dad made us sit down every weekend and watch a black and white film. And Chloe's like, oh, great dad. But then she's like, yeah. And then I would just watch it and look at the glam of it. So she was very much into the fashion side. Yeah. Not acting.
I mean, which that's probably why she pursued that
perfectly
first.
Fine.
Yeah.
But just sad for Chloe, I think, to put her in. She did a very good job. I think it could have been a much more interesting episode had Chloe been put with someone who had a long career
in
acting.
It's a very,
because
different
actors
background.
On actors is typically prestigious actors on actors.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them before, yeah.
So it's quite disappointing that they threw Kim Kardashian in, who, look, fair enough if she's getting into acting. She has every right to, but because she's famous doesn't mean maybe she should have got the slot that someone who's been doing the hard yards for a long time got. So it was interesting. It was wild to see, but there were moments where poor Chloe, she did a fantastic job, but she looked dead behind the eyes.
She's like, this is a grind.
She was babysitting and trying to get in deep, and then Kim would be like, oh, interesting. And she cut her off and be like, when I did this. And you're like,
oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Whoever decided, let's do this, shame on you, honestly.
Oh, you know why they did it.
Shame on you for doing that to Chloe 70.
Classic variety.
Yeah. Well, that was what I watched. That's what I watched last night.
Okay, interesting. I might have to check it out now.
It's interesting, but also
that
like
kind of juxtaposition between the two.
What are we? Yeah, well. Yeah,
interesting. Should we just about get into our world cinema extravaganza? There's so many films that we kind of between the two of us have seen and we can talk about. So, but first, I want to kind of ask you a question or two. Is maybe the audience isn't aware of like world cinema or like, because we're obviously a little bit into this than other people. What would be your kind of definition of like world cinema? Like where would you sit and what would your explanation to the audience kind of be?
I think at one point it was definitely, because I studied a class called world cinema at university, and it was very much anything that wasn't English language and was by filmmakers from not the West. So basically if it was Australian, American, or like, you know, the United Kingdom, technically that was kind of the West, and it was anything other than that. I think now it's a bit broader, but mostly my look is, so anything that's not from the West, from our perspective, because we are the West, is considered world cinema. And it's sort of just, different languages or directors from other countries is a loose term of world cinema. Cause like we're part of the problem that is the West is the center. Hollywood's very the center of the filmmaking world, even if things like Nollywood, which is like Nigeria's Hollywood, is bigger, actually.
Well, I was going to bring up even just Bollywood.
Yeah.
Would you count that as world cinema?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
For us, but from our perspective.
From our perspective. It's, but we can't really do a podcast and consider it not world cinema because we are Australian from the West.
Well,
so
I think so. We're such a clone of like both the US and the United Kingdom.
Oh, absolutely.
We take basically our entire identity as filmmaking from those two kind of places. Mm-hmm. So from our perspective of the episode, we're going to look at it from basically any film that's kind of could it either be a director or the production company itself is outside of the Western cinema scope.
Yeah.
I had fun with this one, to be honest with you. And I think the reason why is, and we'll get into it, is like a lot of these films are subtitled because they're in different languages and stuff. For me, I think I get into these movies more because I have to pay attention. So I'm intently into the story from start to finish because I have to be. And because there's times where I'm watching like, you know, a Hollywood film or like even an Australian film. And yeah, I'm watching it, I'm listening to it. But am I actively listening to it? I might be, you know, every, you know, couple of minutes, I might pick up my phone or, you know, I might go and get a drink from the fridge. And yeah, I'm hearing it, but am I taking it in? Whereas watching some of these films like, you know, like Parasite or even like Old Boy last night, I'm reading every line and I'm watching the scene as it's playing out with those lines. And I'm like, okay, that's the emotion as well from that line. I'm taking it in more and I feel like I'm more engrossed in these stories. And I think I do enjoy them a little bit more to a degree than some of the stuff I've seen just in regular filmmaking.
Yeah, because the thing is with this stuff, you have to be active in it. Because if you look away for a second, you're like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's unconscious, but it's true. And I think, I don't know, I really enjoy watching a lot of quote unquote world films, and I have for a long time now. I think what started it mostly was uni.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd seen many before that. I'd probably seen a couple, but not a whole lot. And then, yeah, I got into it in uni. I watched a lot in quick succession because I was also making a documentary at the same time as I was studying this class. So I went home and I got everything from the library and I just binge watched like the 10 films or whatever. And I was like, cool, I've done the watch, like the required watching for this class. I don't have time to sit and do the screenings, which is a shame because it would have been nice to watch them,
yeah,
you know, in that way, but it just was never going to happen. Yeah, I think it's a shame that a lot of people don't watch films from other countries because of the subtitles. And I think it got highlighted a few years ago at the Academy Awards when Parasite won. And how do you say his name now? I've got it in my head.
Bong Joon
Ho.
Ho.
Yeah, sorry. I was reading it and then I got it in my head about it and I was like, I'm going to butcher it.
Bong Joon Ho.
But yeah, he said, once you overcome the one inch tall barrier of subtitles, you'll be introduced to so many more amazing films. And it's true. There are incredible films from all over the world, and to not watch them simply because you have to read a little bit of subtitles is insane. But also subtitles are getting popular now, even with people watching English language, which is not me. Are you that person? Are you a subtitle person?
I'm fine with subtitles.
But do you put it on for English language?
No.
I get distracted. If it's an English language film.
I read it. And like for a movie that's obviously in a different language you're supposed to, but for something like it's just English language, no, I don't. No. I don't put it on because I'll just look at the words too much.
Yeah. It does take practice, I will say that, to watch stuff in foreign languages and get into the habit of reading the subtitles quick enough to then watch the action.
Yeah, I was flicking so much last night while watching Old Boy. I was what's happening?
The more you do
you
it,
get used to it,
the easier it is to watch those kind of films. Yeah. And I think at one point I was watching La Casa de Papel, which got English translated into Money Heist, but it's a completely different title because it's supposed to be The House of Paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got really into that at one point. So I watched about 5 seasons and maybe I watched 4. I never finished it because it's got a bit too fast and furious and they killed off one of my favorites. And I was like, oh.
I'm not watching
that.
This
didn't
anymore.
Feel like a just murder. That just felt like you did it. And it
just a shock value.
It hurt. So yeah, I don't know. I really love it.
Is there any standout movie to you of the past, 20 years or?
Oh man, there's like so many that I've watched.
You've got a bigger list than me. You've got quite a few. You're a bit more expansive on this.
I have got a long list.
I've got a couple. But
part of it helped that I've watched so many at uni, but yeah. I don't know. It's just something that I've slowly started to watch more and more and more of.
Okay, let's talk about one we've both watched. Yeah. How about Pan's Labyrinth?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the first that I did watch.
Would have been one of the first.
I love that film. I haven't watched it. I don't think I've seen it more than once, but I really loved it. Yeah.
We watched it for Guillermo del Toro's episode last season. And I'm so glad you picked that director for that week because that was my favorite film of his. It still is. It's
mine too.
Phenomenal. It's such a whimsical kind of fairy tale.
It's like a fable.
But it's like a fable. Yeah.
I love it so much.
And yeah, it's subtitled as well. You get used to it, but it's the perspective of the young girl and the magical land that she goes on. It's whereas juxtaposed to the World War II setting it's in, it's very well done. What I take away from a lot of the world cinema films that we've at least watched is I feel like they're so much less restricted by like the way that Hollywood is. It's like there's so many people or production companies or groups of people that you have to kind of like get approval of for everything. Yeah. Like, and I feel like it takes away from the art form that is cinema.
I think so too.
I feel like these world films are just let loose.
You see,
you know
it?
What I mean? Like the whole thing is just a art form.
You
basically
see it a lot in the European cinema as well.
Yeah.
Because they are so close to the UK in culture to a degree. I'm not saying that they're like the same, but they are, there's a similarity, right? But their films are just so much more artistic as opposed to, you know, even something that comes out of the UK and it's very, like you said, Hollywoody, these are the rules.
Yeah.
Something like from the 2001, like Amelie.
Yeah.
Such an art house film.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have not.
You have not seen it.
But it's huge enough for me to have.
You know about
it. I definitely know about it.
So like stuff like, you know, Amelie, one from the 60s, like Breathless, which is a French film. Yeah. It started a whole, like the French New Wave cinema.
Yeah.
Which.
A lot of films are using that those techniques from French New Wave these days. Mm,
Francis Ha is one of the big ones.
Francis Ha. Recently. There was one I watched recently and I can't think of it. It was like a new film. I think it was either Hitman or it was Bad Boys. I think it was Hitman. And it used like that crash zoom in on a character when it's in the, you know, like from like a, you know, like a street setting into their face. Which is huge during French New Wave, but they're using that a lot more. They used it a little bit in Old Boy as well. So it definitely has had its influences all around the world.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I've got a couple filmmakers as well that I particularly like. And if we're getting, I guess if we're going to talk about European, there's a French filmmaker that did most famously in 2019, Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, that was huge.
I think it's Celine Scamia or something like that. I can't pronounce it because whatever.
Yeah.
Not French. And it's just a gorgeous, yeah, Shannon is. He's just mimed. I know some French. It's a gorgeous film that's set like way, way back. And this little, you know, it's like, you know, when ladies just sort of lived out somewhere and then they'd have like companions or whatever. And she has a companion who's coming in to paint her. And it's this secret, quiet romance that they have on the beach. And most of it's just in like longing looks and stuff like that, but it's one of the most beautiful films I've seen, truly. And I remember I was watching it and it gets sort of emotional towards the end because they haven't seen each other for a long time, and there's a bit that ties them together without getting into specifics because it's worth the watch. But my sister came into the living room and she hadn't watched any of the film, and she came in at the very last scene and she just watched it, and I just heard her go, whoa, that was like art. And she doesn't watch a lot of like art films.
She's not into it, yeah.
And it is. It's exactly that. And she's done another film a couple of years later called Petite Maman, which is like Little Women, the little girls. And it's this gorgeous film about a girl, she's like 6 or 7, and she goes off into the woods outside of the house, and she meets another little girl who looks exactly like her, and they're just best friends, and they just have this journey. But what it actually is the other little girl she's meeting is her mum from the past. And they're just hanging out and they have this whole relationship.
Yeah.
But what they do beautifully in this film, and it's like a French artsy thing, is like never once is it explained how it's her, technically her mom.
Yeah, that's not the
point of this film.
It's not the
point. Just, you, as you're watching it, you realize that's what it is.
Sounds like All of Us Strangers.
And then
very similar.
Yeah. You just go and watch it and it makes sense and it's emotional and it's beautiful and it's not explained, and I love that.
I like that too. Where they just, I like, it's like you don't it's have not to spoon necessary. Feed the audience every single thing.
No,
like, it's not. If it's not a mystery movie, you don't need to have every part. I like that. I really like.
If you haven't, if anyone hasn't seen those ones, very much worth checking out. I love them so much. There's a quality to them that's just, well, Petite Maman is particularly sweet and just has that feeling, and then Portrait of a Lady on Fire is just, it's sad, but it's in a, like a really beautiful, like honest way. Both did very, or Portrait of a Lady got
very well,
massive.
Yeah. It was huge.
I think it was up for a couple
awards. Yeah, it was
gorgeous.
I was going to talk about a particular director. We watched one of his films, but the other one as well I watched obviously last night. I mentioned it a few times. Park Chan-wook. He did Decision to Leave, 2022, but he also did the one of the hugest, probably world cinema films of the past 20 years is Old Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into details of the film. It's about this run-of-the-mill guy who gets kidnapped at the start of the film, and he's in prison for 15 years, and then all of a sudden is just released, and he's got like 5 days to work out the mystery of why, not only why was he imprisoned, but more of the so, why was he released? And it goes on this absolute freight train of a story. And I absolutely loved it. It was so well done. so beautifully acted too from everyone involved. It's from 2003, so it looks a bit grainy, but I think it adds to the film, like grittiness. It's got like, it's got humor infused, which is done in a really smart way, not like slapstick comedy. It's just funny things happen throughout the film. It's hugely action packed as well, because he's going on a revenge kind of tour once he's out, because he wants to know what the hell is going on. So he's got this huge vendetta against who is doing this to him. And you eventually do kind of get more of the story as towards the end of the film, and I'll leave it at that. If you haven't seen Oldboy, bloody well check it out. It's huge in terms of world cinema films. And they did do a remake of this in the US 10 years later in 2013, and it is heavily criticized because it's just not done the same. It's hard. When they try to do a remake, it does not compute.
This is one that I've wanted to watch forever, and I ended up watching Decision to Leave instead, because I knew you said I really want to watch this one this week. So I was like, I'll watch it so we have something to talk about.
Yeah. So we did both watch Decision to Leave.
But I really wanted to go back and watch Old Boy and even The Handmaiden, which is another one that is very famous by him. I'm keen to kind of, I think over the next few weeks, I'll definitely watch a fair few of the films that I
didn't get to.
Definitely Old Boy.
Yeah, it was one of the biggest ones.
Because I watched Decision to Leave, and I just think it was so beautifully crafted. Everything is intentional. There's so much that I almost didn't even notice in it. And I like went on Letterboxd and I was reading some reviews, and people were like, oh, like, did you pay attention to even like the wallpaper?
Yeah.
Is like all symbolic.
Yeah. It's the same with Old Boy. So this director, he gets filmmaking. It's insanely detailed in all of it, the script writing, the acting, the light, even lighting, all of it.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely gorgeous. But I think what you were saying as well is when they try and remake something in America, what often happens is it's hard to translate because it's so based in the culture.
I was about to say, it's infused in the culture as well as the story that it's telling. And a lot of things don't, you can't just copy and paste certain cultures and I hope it works.
No, I won't go into too much of a Decision to Leave because a lot of it is a mystery.
Yeah, it was really good though. I was hooked. I was like, I wanted to know what was happening. Essentially, the premise of the story is this guy is investigating a murder, and he kind of gets involved with the widow, and that's kind of where it plays out from there. It's a pretty simple premise, but it goes on a pretty cool journey throughout the 2 hours. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's one if you talk about too much, it gets.
Yeah, you kind of give away some
without
stuff.
Saying anything. The ending.
Oh my god! Yeah. Oh my god!
Like she's.
Yeah.
Oh man, so good. Sorry, I'm like miming to Shannon, so we can talk about it without spoiling it for you guys. But it
awesome
is
ending.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's a really cool film. Check this guy out. This director's done some really cool stuff. But that's just one of the many directors that are known for like huge world cinemas.
I was gonna say as well, if you're not strongly into world cinema, a good way to get into it is to watch ones that are partially English language, partially in another language. So the big one recently was Past Lives, that was up for a ton of awards.
Mm-hmm. Celine Song. It was her first directorial debut, which is a huge swing and a hit out of the park.
Oh my god, I loved this film. I think I liked it more than you.
I liked it. I can appreciate it. I just watched it on TV at home. I really appreciated it. I thought it was really well done, but I just didn't.
You didn't feel it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Nothing wrong with it. No, nothing wrong with it whatsoever. I just didn't get on the emotional train that I guess the movie wanted to be on. But I can appreciate it from a filmmaking standpoint.
I'm drawing a blank on who the lead is in it, and that's
she's in
really
Russian Doll.
I know, I love her so much, and it's just gone out of my head. But I think she needed a leading role, and she finally got it, and she nailed it. Yeah, this one is partially part Korean, part
English,
because it's loosely autobiographical. It's inspired by, but not true. The character
they assimilate
Nora,
over to
America. was in Korea as a kid and then came to America, and now it's exploring her getting back in touch with this boy that she was best friends with / maybe a little bit childhood like crush in love with. And it's how do you reconnect with something that someone and a whole culture that you've lost.
Greta Lee.
Oh, man. Greta Lee. I was like, it's good. I love her so much. But yeah, it's sort of talking about cultural loss and how do you come back from that, especially when you're somewhere else in your life now and what that means.
Do you think maybe taking away the romantic aspect of this film, do you think maybe you related it a little bit more to this cultural lost aspect than I did?
Maybe.
Given your background?
Maybe. I'm not even sure if it was that, because obviously, like, I am Indian, but, yeah. like barely, because, yeah, it was so much culture was lost before it even got to me that, like,
exactly.
What does that mean? Who knows? I don't even think it was that. I saw it in cinema, so I was...
You probably got a better...
In it.
Yeah.
And I think I was just on the ride and just loved that one. So that's another one. I watched a French film years ago that I really, really love. Clouds of Sils Maria.
Mm.
It was a big one. Kristen Stewart's in it. She won a César Award. She was the first American to be...
I didn't know that.
...awarded what is essentially like a French Oscar, because they don't give it to Americans because they don't like...
They're very much...
Americans, like, which is interesting because she ended up then playing... Jean Seberg, who was in Breathless, which was one of the other films where they let an American.
Yeah, interesting.
And this film, Clouds of Sils Maria, is starring Juliette Binoche as this washed up older actress now. And she was mega famous in her youth for playing a particular part. And Kristen Stewart plays her assistant. So she's sort of just following her around. And now Juliette Binoche's character has been asked to not quite reprise her role, but star in the same play, but as the older character. And it's very much one of these plays that it's a play inside of a film that's sort of about the same thing, because it's like about, you know, actors, and one's young, one's old, and the envy and stuff. But now she's no longer the starlet and she's struggling with that. But the thing that makes this film so interesting is there's times in the film where the characters are running lines with each other, but you're not sure if they're actually running lines or if they're having a conversation with each other, because the material in the play parallels where the characters are at. Life,
it's really well done.
It's fascinating. And so it's part English, part French.
Mm.
But just that thing where you're just not sure what's going on, but it still flows as a film is really interesting. Yeah.
I like that.
I watched it a few years ago, but I was like...
Yeah, it's 2014.
Wow, like other countries can... do this and no one's stopping them. Yeah. And
that's what I like about it, is they're not restricted. It's so good.
That was one that got me interested, because I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
The French are doing something.
French are doing something here. We spoke about Lars as a director before. I was going to bring up the other one I watched this week. I watched one, there's two volumes to this film, and because it's one giant film that they broke up into two parts. It's called Nymphomaniac.
Please do. I've been meaning to watch Nymphomaniac forever.
It's really good, but like you said before, he does really depressive movies. This is the same feeling. Like, at the end of the film, you don't feel good about a lot of things, but you can appreciate the film at the same time. It's like a really well-made film. It's not like this, like, you know, like teen comedy sex romp. It's like the real gritty, raw look at someone who's a sex addict. And she's basically explaining to someone her entire life story with having that as like an addiction.
Oh.
And it's set up in like...
Who's the lead in this?
Charlotte Gainsbourg. She's also in Antichrist, one of Lars's other films. She plays the older version. So when there's like flashback scenes, there's a different actress playing the younger, Sophia something, who plays off against... who's the guy in Transformers? I forget his name.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, he's in
LaBeouf, LaBeouf?
Shia LaBeouf.
I don't know. People say it differently.
And he's the younger version of the quote-unquote love interest that's throughout all the chapters. It's set up in chapters, eight chapters throughout the two movies. And so it starts with Stellan Skarsgård, the older, the dad version. He finds her beaten in an alley because he's walking home. Takes her home and like tends to her to make sure she's okay. And then they get into a conversation. And he's like, well, I guess what happened to you? And then she's like, oh, well, I have to start at the start. And that's what starts the story. And so you get her life story. And it is just one movie, right? Over four hours. There's two cuts to this. There's an uncut version and a cut version. I watched on the SBS, so I watched the cut version. So 4 hours. It is, the other version's 5.5 hours long. It's a monstrous film.
Like, is that necessary? I'm not sure.
Like, it's hard to explain. The volume one and volume two are very samey, but very different in terms of the feel of it. The part one is her as a younger character, and it's telling the version of someone where, yes, they've got a sex addiction, but it's showcasing like I guess, the world and experiences that this person could become part of from having that.
Very young and naive, maybe because it's so early in this journey or whatever.
And it's showcasing some experiences that she could have, where it would be like be comical or like just, you know, a fun experience or something. Part two is when she's getting a bit older and it's kind of the ramifications of having it as well. Like, what's some of the stuff that could be, you've got this, what could that lead to in a bad way? So you get a lot of like the, oh, okay, like this is pretty full on in part two, in volume two. So I can see where they broke, why they broke it up into a certain part. At the same time, it cuts back to them in a room, and every now and then you get the Skarsgård character being like, oh, so you were like this. And he likes, because he's a scholar.
Okay.
He like alludes to a lot of like philosophical things, religious things. It's a very highbrow film, very highbrow. And he's like alluding to like, a lot of different things as to why she might, and trying to justify her,
I guess it
her
has
actions.
To be highbrow, because otherwise
it's just smutty.
Smutty and.
Yeah. And it's not that. It's not that. Like, yeah, there's a lot of gratuitous nudity and like sex scenes and stuff, but it's not done in a way of.
It's done in a European way.
Exactly right. Yes. But it's a really, really interesting long journey that you go along. And for me, I really enjoyed it. There was the last scene in particular I didn't like, just the last scene. And I'm not going to explain why, but I just didn't. For me, it felt tacked on.
Mm.
Didn't love that. Literally, it's like the scene goes for like 30 seconds and I'm just like, So I gave part two like a little bit of a markdown in terms of star rating than part one. But overall, it's a wild experience, but very, very Lars. You don't feel great about the ending or about the journeys. It's a full on journey.
No, I guess that makes a lot of sense.
It's got Mia Goth in it as her acting debut in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think she was like 18 or something. So
interesting.
They must have saw that when you're a star.
Yeah. There you go, Shannon. No, I watched another one this week that I've been putting off for a really, really long time. It's called Lamb. It's an Icelandic film. And I've been putting it off because I had a phobia of sheep. Which sounds insane, but I had one as a kid and he wasn't right in the head and he used to attack us a lot. And I'm small now, but like
still, you're
9'10",
quite short,
very small. And he used to come for you. Like he wasn't just like, oh, you know, like he would eye you and then you were like, oh, I've got to jump this fence before I'm rammed into it. So I was like, I'm intrigued by this film because it's got Noomi Rapace in it, who is in the
Girl
Millennium
with the Dragon
Tattoo.
Yeah. The
Millennium
Swedish
trilogy.
Version.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, she's good. And I'm curious about this. Now, I wasn't super scared of this horror film, actually, like I thought I was going to be. That being said, there was a lot of sheep and I was like, I'm not about this.
I feel uneasy.
Yeah, I was like, no. And then, you know, there's like it's like stuff that's so funny that made me like, ugh, was like, oh, just like she has a baby lamb and she's looking after it. And I was like, no, bad idea. This is going to turn, it's going to end badly. I know the story. I've been here. It's weird because basically it's a film about a couple who can't have kids and then they're helping the lambs give birth because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. They're on like a sheep farm, whatever, sheep station. And then they birth this lamb and you think, oh, it must just be a lamb. But then it's part human.
Interesting.
They don't address it until the husband's brother comes. Like he's sort of, I think he's like a drifter. Like he'll go off and do his thing and then he ends up back with them because he's got nothing. And he's like, what the?
Yeah.
And they're like, we're happy. Like we have a kid now. Just like leave it. And you're like.
I'm uneasy about all this.
What?
Yeah. Okay.
And it's weird. And you think that I'm just going to spoil it because I don't think anyone's watching it. And if you haven't.
I might, but I don't
seen
care.
This,
it's
just
fine.
Skip ahead like 30 seconds. Basically, the whole time you're afraid of the lamb being like evil and like, because that's how it's like.
It's portrayed on
that's
screen
how it's
that
portrayed.
Way. Yeah.
But then at the very. Well, there's like a couple things that are happening, like, and it's weird, like people are getting like shot and stuff. And you're like, well, what the hell? Like who's shooting them?
The lamb.
And then, no, but at the very end, it's like this weird, like satanic demon sheep, ram, part human, part ram thing, kind of like a minotaur, but
yeah,
sheep.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just like at the end, it takes the hand of the half lamb child thing and they just walk off into the
they
distance.
Leaves. Yeah, leaves.
But it's like uncomfortable because it's part minotaur. That's like part
human.
Man's ass. Yeah. But
then it's got the upper body.
Blimey. Yeah, weird. Okay. Yeah.
I might have to check this out and just go, what is this?
It was
what
weird. It wasn't as satisfying as I'd hoped it would be. But, you know, here's to watching lots of films.
Yeah. I'll talk about two in succession from 2023. Mm-hmm. The big two from that was, these are world cinema films, definitely, is The Zone of Interest.
Yes.
Which is the Holocaust film.
I've not got to this one yet. I really want to.
So this one, Best Academy Award for Best Sound Design. And when you watch the film, you will understand why, is because it's about this family living in this house, and they reckon they've got the best life. And this house is next to Auschwitz. Like, it's on the outside.
Yikes.
Yeah. So he, like, the dad's like one of like the elite like members of the people who run the camp there, and the other family members, which are a couple of kids and the wife. The wife's like, it's really, you don't feel good about this film. And it's like nothing explicitly said to you. It's just some matter-of-fact things that are shown on screen, and you go, I hate this. Someone will come and just drop off a bunch of, like, different coats to the wife, and she's going through them and, like seeing if they fit her in that, and then she finds some things in, like, the pocket, and it's, like, personal items. And you know that they've just been given to her from, like, the camp and stuff, and you're like, oh, I don't feel good about that.
That's the thing that always fascinates me, and I really want to watch this film, is obviously in history and in film and whatever that are talking about this, obviously it's the men that are directly involved in it, right? Because they're part of it. But the wives and the children that are just like,
this is their life.
Their life, whether they choose it or not. Because back then it's like, what, the 30s, 40s? Like late 30s, early 40s. So they didn't really have a lot of agency anyway. So they're just stuck in this very uncomfortable reality. And it's like,
yeah.
You can't be like, this is bad, because that wasn't an opinion. You couldn't have that opinion back then. But at the same time, you can't enjoy it.
It's rough. It's like, rough.
Yeah.
The entire time in this film, you can hear in the background the burners from the camp as well, the entire movie. So it is just there in the back of your mind. And
I guess that's a reality though, right?
That's what it would have been like there. And so it's such a rough film to watch, but it's so well done at the same time. It's hard to be like, oh, because it's this family that's trying to basically be successful as running this camp. It's very, very hard to watch, but also it's very well made. It's, yeah, it's a good film. It's why it won that award as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to have this pop up on streaming somewhere, because I really do want to watch it.
The other one was, and it's so much fun, like, not like the other ones, but like Godzilla Minus One is such a good film. Oh my God, this has to be the best Godzilla film I've ever seen.
When was this one made?
2023, last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a brand new film. It's completely done out of Japan, out of the original makers of Godzilla, the IP. And it is such a good portrayal, because it's a real character story as well. So you only see Godzilla when it's like, you know, seen as like destroying something, but it's actually a character story. It's about this like young man who's like in the military, and he's, you know, looking after this lady who lives with her. It's a whole story about, because the whole idea of Godzilla is out of the nuclear fallout from World War II. They created this character to represent, that's why he's got atomic breath.
Oh.
It's the destruction.
I've only ever watched one Godzilla film, and I couldn't tell you which one it was.
The American versions are just monster movies.
I stayed up
movies.
Late as a teenager to watch it, and then it ended, and there were more eggs. And I was like, are you kidding? Because it was one of those nights where your eyes are hanging out of your head, but you're like, just one more scene, we can get through it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what? So I kind of have a, like, whatever mentality towards it because of that experience when I watched it.
It's different from a Japanese perspective.
I do
want
to watch it,
though. From an American perspective. Because, the Godzilla represents basically war, and represents like the nuclear bombs that were dropped. Like, that's what he represents. Like, what's a country going to do after that? And like, when say Godzilla turns up and does his atomic breath and destroys a city, what happens then? Like, it's a good illusion, because this one takes place during World War II.
Ooh, I'm gonna watch this.
It's really good. It's all in subtitle, like Japanese and stuff, and the story, like the actual characters that you are completely on board. You know how like you watch like a monster movie like Kong versus Godzilla, you do yeah. not get, like, they're the shallowest characters. Like, you don't give a shit about them. It's a monster movie for a monster movie. This, you actually really care about the characters. And honestly, some of the best CGI work I've seen in quite a few years, and it didn't have much of a budget. It's crazy. It's a crazy good film.
I'm
yeah,
so in.
Yeah, you should definitely check this out. Just got added to Netflix last week.
I want to talk about a couple. One of these ones you told me to watch when we first became friends, and this is how I was like, oh. Yeah, anyway, this one I want to talk about because we first became friends because you started telling me, you've got to watch this film, you've got to watch this film, when we first started working together. And I was like, oh, maybe I can be friends with this guy. Like, he seems interesting and interesting stuff
oh,
that
you'd be
I'm
right.
interested in. and that was, you told me to watch Parasite.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, Minari, actually.
Yeah, both of those films are really good.
You begged me to buy Parasite.
Parasite, yeah.
And I watched it and I loved this film. This was the big one that won a ton of awards that year, and it was very much, they pushed watch international, quote unquote, international films.
Yeah.
I love Parasite because
it's really good.
It does not sit in one genre.
No, it does not.
Somehow manages to straddle so many genres in such an interesting and like effective way. Like, I just.
Such a beautiful portrayal of classism.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really well done.
And then.
Really well acted.
I love that still. It's one of my favorite stills from a lot of films because it encaptures people at that age of when both siblings are sitting in the bathroom with their phones up against the
and they're sitting on top of like the, it's where the toilets are, but they're up on that grill.
Just to get some service. They're both like up there with their phones and it's just.
It's great.
It's a very universal thing.
I love even the little things that you don't even think about, that the fact that like it's classism, right? Like,
of course,
it's about one, you know, family being, you know, entitled to a bunch of stuff when the other family's out there to try and get, and it's like, two things. What is a family capable of when they're given the opportunity? And it's with a lot of like different like societal groups in the world. It's the same thing. What would someone be capable of if they had the same opportunities as someone else? That's one thing. But like the little things is the subtle references to classism, as they literally have to walk up a hill to get to this other rich person's house.
Yeah.
Like it's little things like that. Like they go down, and even when it starts to flood, their house literally floods because it's down lower.
The hill, yeah.
And just little things like that. There's subtle things that this director has done to like build in and reinforce that messaging. It's really good.
Yeah, I love that one. And then Minari was just beautiful.
It's just really beautiful film.
My favorite bits was the boy and his grandma.
Oh, so touching. I could watch that again, actually. It's been a few years and it's just a nice character study of this family that immigrates to America. They basically farm.
They're trying to just build a new life.
Yeah, build a new
life.
It's
hard. Go figure. Because they're immigrants. Yeah,
because they're immigrants. And there's a few things. It's not hugely like political. I wouldn't say it's like too heavy, but it's just a nice film. It's just a really nice film, Minari. And it's got Steven Yeun in it from Beef.
Yeah. And I think what I like about watching quote unquote world films is just how easy it is to be immersed in a completely opposite culture. And I remember one I watched in uni. It's a film by a Canadian Indian director. And it was a film called Water, it was filmed in 2005, and it was set in, I can't remember when it was set, but it was like early 19 somethings. And it was about the widows in India and what happens when you become a widow over there, but it was from the perspective of a child bride. So it was this little girl who got married off and then became a widow, but because she's like seven to nine, I think.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's kind of grim, but it doesn't focus on that a lot. It's sort of, I don't think she was a wife for very long. I think it was just kind of like, I don't think much.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not really about that, but it's just about her being a widow because they then live in a certain community and there's all these like societal rules that they all follow. But because she's like nine, she's like, no, I want to go play, or I want to go do this and I want to go do that. And it's just told from the perspective of like a cheeky little girl that's just in this situation. Yeah. But it's so fascinating. It's such a good film. And there was three. There was like Water, Fire and something else. It's like a trilogy by this. But I can't find them anywhere at the moment.
Oh, really?
And it's really annoying because I'd love to rewatch the film because it's just so fascinating, but also like a very good film. And I just love that. You can do that with world films. Like you just go understand a completely opposing culture.
That's what I like about this is you can appreciate the cultures just by just immersing yourself in the stories. Three I'll talk about in succession is it's a few anime style movies.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention those, but
yeah, I'm going to mention these all at once because they're all done by the same director. These aren't Studio Ghibli films, but I mean, you're going to be pretty close to looking like those. These are Your Name, Weathering With You, and Suzume. They're all done by the same studio, but not Studio Ghibli. These are really, really, really good films. I rank Your Name as one of my favorite films. Definitely my favorite anime films. Same thing. It's so well done in terms of a character story. Like a lot of these have like, I wouldn't say fantasy elements to it, but like it's not grounded super in reality, like completely, which allows the anime allows it to kind of take on that form. Weathering, like Your Name's about, like it's got a bit of time travel. Weathering With You's got like weather phenomenons, and Suzume's got like, it's like weird portals, like the doors open to different, yet again, time travel as well.
Oh, interesting. I read a book about that. It was Japanese.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes sense. Suzume just got added to Netflix. I think the other two are on there as well. They're worth checking out. They're really, really good. And it's by the same guy making all three. And I would say, rivals some Studio Ghibli. So if you are a fan of those films, like your Howl's Moving Castles and Spirited Away and stuff, you'll get something out of these three films.
I have been meaning to check out a few more just because I need to broaden my horizons or whatever you want to say. But
expand the palette.
Yeah, just expand some of the stuff I'm watching. I mean, there's tons more that I've – well, maybe not tons, but there's quite a few more that I haven't
– spoken about.
Spoken about. But, you know, maybe that's not necessary. But I did want to mention quickly Squid Game.
Yes.
Like that's a great example of something that went gangbusters.
Huge. I can't
– Everyone watched it. I think a lot of people were watching it dubbed, which I think is a shame. I'm a subtitles person. Mm. I don't like dubbing. It makes me – irritated. And I think often you don't get, even if you don't understand the language, obviously you can read it and get the gist.
You know what's going on.
But it has that feeling because it sounds the way it should sound, like the emotions are
you
correct.
Still hear what they're saying.
I think when it gets dubbed, the emotions often
lost,
which I think is a shame.
I agree, because although you're reading it, you hear the tone in certain words that are when they're inflicted. So you can kind of understand entirely what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're dubbed, they're just not, it's just not, because they usually dub it to a way where it matches up.
Yeah.
The words the same. And you're like, well, they clearly it's a translation issue then as well. So I don't know. Just read it.
Yeah.
just read it. I will say I do watch Dragon Ball Z with it dubbed. Because I grew up that way.
That's nostalgic, though.
Yeah, that's how it was on Cheese TV.
I was watching it as a kid.
Like, some people watch it as, I'm like, no, not for me.
I think that basically sort of wraps up.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot of what we had to say.
One more, I'll just quickly before
Sorry.
I'm not going to talk about it, but Another Round. So in 2020, it's got Mads Mikkelsen in it, which you'll know from Casino Royale and a bunch of other films.
I've not seen that one yet.
It is really good. It's from his home country. And so it is in a different language as well. Mm-hmm. So that's my last one. Check it out.
But yeah, also I just wanted to add, if anyone's listening from, you know, not the West, and I know some people are because we get a little infographic.
Analytics.
Please write in, tell us some of your favorite films.
Absolutely.
Because we want to watch so many more and we'd like to know what kind of got you into films.
Yeah.
What your countries are doing that we maybe haven't heard of, because there's so many hidden gems that we're just never going to come across.
Yeah, we get the big ones, which, you know, everyone kind of hears about. And you go, yeah, I'll check that one out. But there's probably some stuff that, you know, is off the radar that we'd love to see.
And, yeah, so I'd love to hear from you guys. And if you're not from, you know, around the world and you're from the West, but you've got some favorite films that are international, quote unquote, get in touch because we want to watch what you guys are watching as well. And as always, thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, please give it a follow. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at BingeLists. Or you can email us at bingelistandboxofhits@gmail.com. Have a good week, everybody, and happy watching.
Yeah, thank you, guys.